and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. My name is James Gilmore. It's episode number 274. And this week I am joined by Peter Willington.
Oh, hi.
And Alicia Judge.
Ooh, hello.
Hello there. New guests this week. Everyone who is regular to the podcast will know Peter, as he's been hanging around for ages. Can't seem
like
to get rid
smell.
Of him.
Smell.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But we have a newcomer with us today who is Alicia, who is a person who writes for IT Pro Portal. Is that right?
So, yeah, it's a lot more businessy sounding, isn't it? IT
it does
Pro
sound
Portal.
Official.
Yeah, it is. It's the pro and the yeah. I mean, Portal's a game. Can we kind of link it that way?
I guess so. Yeah. I mean, it does seem to be quite well. I'm having a look at the site. It's kind of mobile oriented, but does it just cover a much broader spectrum of stuff? Does it?
Yeah. So it's very much kind of really broad. We cover everything from smartphones and like the fun stuff like video games to kind of enterprise IT with storage virtualization. So that's a lot of.
Bloody hell! That sounds terribly boring.
Awesome.
If anything that's your thing.
Well, do you guys get to actually look at any games, or is it mostly the tech side you focus on?
It's kind of like a bit of everything. So I've run away and kind of taken the consumer section as my own, so I kind of
ooh,
do
nice.
The it's fun. And so taking the kind of so, the gaming
so
side.
You get to play all the games, and like everybody else has to talk about monetization.
Yeah, oh, you've got the buzzwords down. It's there's some cool ones. There's like wearable technology and kind of some cool stuff too. Then there's cloud cool. storage and kind of crazy, but yeah, there is fun there too, which is good.
Now, funnily enough, though we focus on the consumer side, that whole business-to-business or terms like monetization has unfortunately crept in there, and you can't kind of get away from it now. Ever since everything went free-to-play, there's been this big slant where even the average consumer has to focus on the monetization options a little bit more when they're choosing to buy or not buy games.
To buy or not to buy.
Exactly.
We've got Hamlet coming in here now.
You even mentioned that in your bio or something. One of your bios, I read that somewhere.
Yeah. Swapping Hamlet for hardware. Yeah.
There you go. See, you're all obsessed. Have you been? This is completely off topic. Have you been to the Globe?
I've not, and our office is literally right next to it. We're
what?
Right
really?
On the river.
It's beautiful.
I really want to go.
The Globe is badass. Totally. I've been to see. I actually saw Hamlet there, but Much Ado About Nothing, which is one of my faves.
Nice.
Do go if you're next door. You've got no excuse. You should be able to just peer over the side.
There's one on at the moment. The people have been fainting because there's been so much blood and
really?
Like fully
Macbeth?
Grown men.
Titus Andronicus.
It's Titus Andronicus, that's the one. Yeah. I've been meaning to go see. There's just been like full-blown decapitations.
And this is getting very Shakespearean, which is going right into my alley.
That's why everyone tuned in for this gaming podcast.
Video games and Shakespeare. That's the one where a man gets fed to his wife via a pie. Like, he gets chopped up and then put into a pie. It's like, it's Shakespeare's first play, and it's basically a 15-year-old William Shakespeare going, ha-ha, I can have swords. It's amazing.
First on this week's update, Badland, which is the floaty platformer, but not platformer really thing, which everybody loves and we love slightly less. You can now go 4-player co-op on it, which sounds potentially damaging to the iPad, because it's not 4 people in 4 different locations, it's 4 people on the same pad.
Oh, I didn't realise that. I thought, oh man, that is crowded.
Yeah. So it's full-on co-op multiplayer, and each one of the players around the pad takes control of a different group or cluster of those little fluffy bug things. You can see it playing in the window to the right at the moment. And you all tap a corner of the screen, and that controls it. So you're physically all round there, like head-to-head, going tap-tap-tap-tap, trying to make it through the level as one group. Okay. They've done that to the entire day one campaign, which is like the first 40 levels of the game. I found the game has quite a random, chaotic nature to it anyway. Just playing it as a one player with 4 people, this is going to be mental, isn't it?
Absolutely. It will still look absolutely beautiful in motion. I love the fact that they've added these little colours to them as well.
Yeah.
The little colour around the eyes.
They're even different characters. Like, some of them have one eye and a couple of them have a pair. And one of them looks really angry. Yeah, it was always a beautiful looking game and got, you know, rated hugely highly. Though we weren't as impressed as everyone else was, it's still, you know, you can't ignore the art and all that beautiful little thing.
Oh no, it's stunning. It's in the backgrounds and everything. It's just interesting that they've decided to add a multiplayer. It just feels like everyone and their gaming granny just wants to add a multiplayer element to a game. It's just like monetization or, yeah.
Or multiplayer. It's very difficult with mobile because if you're going to go online multiplayer, it's a lot less stable, I find. Peter and I were playing World of Tanks, actually, which has proved pretty good, but you need to be connected to Wi-Fi, really. Trying to do it over 3G, you'll just end up spending £1,000 within 2 hours, I guess.
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem sensible. But if you want to do a nice old-fashioned, round-the-table competitive multiplayer, Badland might be the game for you. You can obviously grab it right now, and the update is free. Also, this is not an update, but a price drop, Machinarium. Now, we were talking about this in relation to Botanicula, which is a recently released game by the same developers, Amanita Design, a Czech bunch. I adore Machinarium. It's beautiful, it's gorgeous, it's quirky, and the puzzles are sweet and cute. To celebrate the release of Botanicula, this is a little bit late, but they've put it on sale. Machinarium can now be bought on Android for £2.50 or $3.02. Because conversions, apparently.
Right.
Or on the App Store on iOS for £1.99 or $2.99. I'm sure we've mentioned whenever there's a price drop for Machinarium on the podcast, because I don't tire of telling people to go and buy it.
This is what's called reporting bias, I believe.
It is. I'd love to say that. I'm not getting anything from Amanita Design, though. There's no sexy backhanding going on,
yeah, unfortunately. Yeah, this is true. That's true. We should get in touch so we can get some cheeky £5 notes like handed to us every time we mention its name, because we do it enough anyway.
Exactly. I'm open to being corrupted. It's fine. Okay, fine. Go for it. Monument Valley. Speaking of awesome, arty, and slightly quirky games, I bloody loved this game when it came out. Reviewed it and said it was fantastico, and Pocket Gamer felt pretty much exactly the same way. If you haven't played it, it's that game in which you're twisting around environments and creating those impossible geometries. You're creating walkways where there should be no walkways. And it's very clever, it's very cute. It's out right now on Android for the very first time. It's been out on iOS for about 2 months now, and it's finally made its way over to the Google Play Store. So you can get it for £2.49 or $3.99 if you're in the US. Like with Imaginarium, you really should get this one, I think. If you have any interest in puzzle games, it's not, and I know, Peter, you're not a big puzzle game guy, it's not particularly hard, it's not super challenging, but it is a lovely journey. It's one of those things that is much an experience as it is a game. And there are so many, and I say this in the review, so many wow moments. So many times where you flick a switch and turn a bridge and suddenly it's like the whole world comes to life and does something which looks to be impossible.
This, along with Tiny Thief and maybe just a couple of other puzzle games, they're the kind of games that I get. This and like The Room, I suppose. Really, for puzzle games, I don't mind them, but it has to be like a super top end, really high profile kind of a puzzle game for me to be interested in. This is certainly one of them. So
I know, Alyssa, you're a Android person, aren't you? You're not iOS.
Yeah, I'm about as qualified to talk on iOS as a toddler is to defuse a thermonuclear device. I literally know nothing about iOS, but Android is completely my bag. Okay. So this is really cool to know that it's launching on there, because I've heard a lot about this game.
Yes.
And obviously you've only ever been able to like watch videos and stuff of it, never been able to play it. So this is really exciting.
Well, if you are a puzzly person yourself or anyone watching, this is definitely worth getting involved over. It's fantastic. So Android, right now, get involved. We've covered it before, we're going to cover it again, we'll do it briefly. Faffy Bird's back, sort of.
Woo!
Hey, yeah.
This was always going to happen.
I know. I got to the point where I was really, really sick of talking about this because it just kept recurring and the story ran and ran. And we mentioned that there was a good chance it was going to return at some point, or there was going to be a sequel or something like that. This week, the creator, Dong Nguyen, confirmed that it will be coming back to the App Store in August, which is a fair way away. Like, considering the game took literally 3 evenings to make, I'm curious as to what's happening in the upcoming, like, 3 months or something that needs to be done for it to be organised.
Is it just him trying to have 3 months now of, like, a marketing kind of drive and just getting everyone talking about it again? It just feels like a cold, hard, calculated decision to even have just pulled it off in the first place.
Yeah,
I feel like a year ago he planned this whole thing. He was like, oh.
Now, he should have the Machiavellian twiddly moustache in all of this, then. I didn't realise he had been plotting it for so long. Whatever his reasoning, he's bringing it back. It's going to come out in August. And apparently, to quote him, will be less addictive. Because remember, when he got taken down the first time, one of the reasons he publicly gave was it was all too much. He was getting horrible comments thrown at him on Twitter and public media. But also, he said that he was aware that it had become an addictive thing for some people, and that was worrying to him. So he pulled it for being too addictive. So apparently, bringing it back, it's going to be less addictive. Now, how do you remove the addictive quality from your game? Doesn't that instinctively make it less good or less playable?
Considering it's all about its addictiveness, that's the point, isn't it? Like, it's about quick, sharp bursts of gameplay. Like, that was what it was so cool about. Like, if it wasn't that instant restart kind of a thing, then it wouldn't have caught on as well as it has. And, in fact, did. I like the fact that there's multiplayer. Because there's a really good browser version of like Flappy multiplayer or something like that, and it's like got thousands of people playing it all at the same time, and you can see the trails of everybody playing at the same time, like ghosts almost.
Yeah.
And that was really, really cool. So I love this idea, and I liked Flappy Bird. I thought it was a very, very good game. So
I could see the appeal. I didn't get drawn in as much as some people did. Even Keith, podcast contributor Keith, who generally doesn't play games, got quite into it for a little bit. Did you get involved, Lycia? Did you get sucked in?
It got in our office. It just became a thing where everyone kind of, in between waiting for an article to upload, they just like get out Flappy Bird. And that was what was so beautiful about it. Though. It was those bus stop moments, those points in your life you can just kind of go, right, I'm going to try and get through it at this point and dip in and dip out of it.
It was the perfect little time killer, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I'd say I probably, I wasn't nursing it like I'd nurse a crystal meth addiction, but it was fairly addictive.
So he doesn't have to worry about you shooting up Flappy Bird in an alley somewhere. That's fine, good to know.
No,
but he did say that he got lots of people either sending him weird death threats for taking it off, but other people saying that they literally couldn't stop playing. I didn't know how seriously to take all that at the time, to be honest. It sounded like an excuse to get it off for other reasons which weren't disclosed.
So I think the wording that was being used was absolutely disgusting by the people that were getting in touch with him, but you do get the feeling that none of them would actually have acted upon it. Like, the wording was just like,
saying?
Well, like, oh, you know, like, this is usual sort of, like, death threat, and I'm putting that in air quotes because, like, it is genuine death threat, but, like, it's very difficult to actually understand tone in just text. So on Twitter, it was things like, I'm going to kill you if you don't bring back Flappy Bird, whereas, like, you know, like, if you said that in person, like, oh, I'm going to kill you if you do that, like, you would know that I wasn't actually thinking about killing that person, but like it's very difficult to actually get that across in on Twitter. And ultimately, if you're getting in touch with the developer of someone, just have the respect. Like, he's made a really cool, fun game for you, and like you go, oh, I don't like the fact that you haven't done XYZ, and it's just like,
it's the problem when anything blows up in the way that this did and becomes so ridiculously popular. You get millions of people playing, you're always going to get a small kind of offshoot of nutters who are going to track you down and be unpleasant. But
there's that sense of ownership, just in the same way that when you read a book that an author's written and you read it and you imagine the characters, anything that's created by someone else, as soon as you experience that, it's like creating something is totalitarian, and then when you actually use it, it's a democracy. You have your own opinion and its own ownership of it.
And if you mix that in with a little bit of internet entitlement, then you're all set for a lovely little crisis
cocktail
and shouting match. But either way, those people should at least be happy to see that it's coming back. I imagine it'll be tweaked slightly. People who didn't care about it in the first place will just care equally as much this time, i.e. not at all. So, if you're not that bothered. But at one point, like we say in the story, there was like a Flappy Bird clone was getting added to the store every 24 minutes. And I am still getting emails from people saying, hey, I've released this new game called Bappy Schmurd, and it's really good and not a clone. And I'm still getting them in my inbox to this day. So there's,
even non-clone games. We were at a big indie pitch in Krakow last week where we saw lots of up-and-coming indie games. And one of them was just kind of a general platformer. It was nothing to do with Flappy Bird, and he called it Flappy Dog. And, just having that kind of...
the prefix. Yeah. Can't get away from it. Well, like I say, August is the time, people, so mark it in your calendars if you care, or just, ignore it if you don't. We announced a few podcasts ago that GBA for iOS, which was a Game Boy Advance emulator that was available on the App Store. Usually with these things, if you want to get a kind of emulator onto your iPhone particularly, you have to sideload it or have a jailbroken device or something like that. But this actually got uploaded to the App Store and approved by Apple and stayed there for a while. The operative bit in that sentence being a while, because it has now been taken down, which we kind of thought, I wonder how long this will be up for. In fairness, it was up for about 3 weeks or a month or something before they took it down.
Mm.
But apparently, they got served with a copyright infringement notice from Nintendo themselves, which is fair enough, really. But it was kind of a rarity on iOS to see one that was officially launched, because on an Android device, which I had for a bit, I had a Galaxy S2 for the longest periods of time, then emulators everywhere. Like, no problems with Google Play. You can grab them left, right, and center. But it was a far trickier process on Apple, because they're a little bit more strict with their App Store regulation stuff.
I guess, obviously, Nintendo stepped in and said, hey, please don't do that anymore, because, fair enough, they have to try and protect their... you know, their copyrights, their technologies, sure. That sort of thing. They've got to protect their interests, even though the DS really, at this point, is a very, very cheap thing to keep the kids interested in. Like, there's not a lot of, like, current cool video games that, like, I would say most people on this chat are interested in, you know? However, I also kind of don't know why you'd want to play Nintendo games on an iPhone. Like, they don't really work on iPhone. Like all of these games... For example, like, the Game Boy emulator, right? Like, it's up, down, left, right, A, B. Like, it's digital. It's completely digital. And unless you get the actual touchscreen controls properly correct, or you've got, you know, a MiFi controller or something like that, then what's the point? It's just going to be naff. Like, you're going to play Kirby's Adventure and go, I wish I was playing this on my original Game Boy.
It is hard work, having played a couple of them. The only thing you could play on the emulators on mobile phones that I found that worked was JRPGs. They worked fine because it wasn't based on quick reactions or instinct or anything, because if you try and convert like a platformer, those overlaid kind of floaty D-pads and stuff are generally rubbish. And there's no useful way to try and control it. But I found with something that isn't quite so twitchy, JRPGs worked really well, and I was playing through Final Fantasy VI, like an old like ROM of it, which I obtained totally legally, incidentally. I didn't, but it worked really well on the S2. I was quite happy playing it. But with this, in this instance, I'm sure there are still some people who will have it on their device, and if they wanted to keep it, there is a guide up on Pocket Gamer which tells you how to cloud save all of your apps so that they don't get deleted if you refresh. So if in case an app gets pulled, you can actually hold on to it. So if you are one of the users who did download it, then you can find a way to stick with it. We didn't technically endorse downloading it at the time, incidentally, because obviously it's a bit of a legal grey area, and this response from Nintendo proves exactly why there's a problem with this. And frankly, surprised it lasted as long as it did.
Yeah.
But there you go. So don't try and download it in the meantime, because you will find nothing. About old games coming to new platforms, sticking with the theme, Half-Life 2 and Portal, right?
Ooh.
Which are quite good, I think we'll all agree.
Oh, they were good games 5 years ago, weren't they?
They're not bad. Well, 10 years ago or something, bloody Half-Life 2. Yeah, they're pretty good. We like them. They've come to Nvidia Shield!
Woo!
What a result. I'll just get my... Hang on, where is it? I'll just... I can't... Oh, no, wait, no one's got one. Hey! I forgot. Oh, what a shame. Yeah, so if you're not familiar with the Nvidia Shield, you can see it playing in the video to one side. It is, to be fair to it, quite a cool piece of kit when you get your hands on it, right? I've played on one Gamescom or something, I forget where. But it's a clamshell device, and it looks like an Xbox gamepad, an original Xbox gamepad, actually. Like the one that was the size of your house. It's got one of them, and it's got a lift-up clamshell screen on the top of it, and you can play, like, A, Android games, and B, stream games from your PC. So the idea is you can basically play Steam games and stuff, provided you're within, like, LAN internet connection and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Basically in your house. Which I always thought was a bit strange, because if you're in your house, play it on the PC, no?
But, yeah.
Whatever. It got announced this week that they've got Half-Life 2 and Portal running on the Nvidia Shield, and I believe they're actually bringing them to the Google Play Store, but they'll only work on Nvidia Shield, and that's it.
Right. Great.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Yeah. Great going, everybody.
Video games. Well, you got to mention it because it's Half-Life and Portal, and Portal's one of my favouritest things ever. Yeah. But I do agree that it's... tough to get excited for it when it's a platform that has such little market saturation at this point. I mean, I don't know anyone who's got one at all.
I know one person who's got one, and they are... And I think they would be happy me saying this, an Android fanboy. They are the sort of person who, and I used to be a bit like this, they're the sort of person who gets a device and wants to know exactly how far they can push it. Like, they buy a graphics card to overclock it. They buy an Android device to see how many different kinds of, you know, emulators they can get working on it. Like, and that's a noble endeavor, and it's a fun pastime, but ultimately, the Shield, the NVIDIA Shield, just always seems to me to be this hobby hardware. Like, it's just, it's just like, oh, I can get Half-Life 2 running. Brilliant. Excellent.
It's very niche. It's a specialist device.
So niche.
Like, more so than any of you. I mean, I say that the Vita's niche at times, but, like, this is ridiculously niche. And imagine there's about 20 people with it. Being an Android person, does this take your fancy at all, Alicia? Could you see yourself actually grabbing one of these ever?
I would just play it on PC, or even, I've got Half-Life 2 on PlayStation 3. Like, it's something that I'd play more indoorsy. It's just you're so right, it's a specialist taste. It's something that you'd go up behind the counter at WH Smith's and ask for and get a really judging look from the cashier. It's just probably not.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It just made me want to go and play it again on PC, frankly, and go and grab Portal, because that's what I like doing. Out and about this week, the zombies are coming back once again. We have The Walking Dead, Season 2, Episode 3, which has just appeared. Oh, look at this. Having just pressed play on the video that's going on in the Twitch stream, the first thing that pops up, it says, spoilers. This video has spoilers in it for Season 2. So everybody, look away if you don't want spoilers. But it's only a couple of little bits. They won't show anything too bad. So if you've been following Season 2, this is the one that puts you in the little shoes of Clementine, as opposed to Lee, who you were guiding through during the first season. They've had two episodes thus far, which have been met with pretty good responses, slightly mixed from some people, because of the shift from playing as Lee to playing as Clementine. Some people think that's a very smart move. Other people thought it was a bit weird or disingenuous. It didn't quite... I mean, I'm slightly iffy about it. There was something about the Lee-Clementine dynamic that really drew you in and made the whole experience that much more traumatic and horrifying. Whereas when it's just Clementine, it feels slightly different. I understand you're a bit of a fan of this series, Alicia.
Yeah, no, I completely love all aspects of The Walking Dead, like the comics, the TV series, the game. I can completely see what you mean, actually. There's something about that almost father-daughter kind of dynamic that really works. But I still think it's a really interesting idea to have something so kind of small, and she's 11 years old, I think, in this, and facing off against something that's so great. And what's really interesting about this series is there's actually more of a villain. There's more of an actual evil in the form of Carver. And whereas before, in the first series, it's all been kind of an evil that people have been driven to through desperation. And now you're dealing with different issues, and then you drop an 11-year-old into the middle of that. And I think that's really interesting.
Well, and what I will say is that the first two, I say they've had some mixed reviews. The second one especially, the second episode, people went, I'm not sure where this is going. Apparently, this one is phenomenal. I've seen nothing but astonishingly high reviews from it since yesterday. So apparently, if you were a little bit iffy on it before, this might be the one that wins you right back. It's obviously available in-app purchase. You know the score by now. Same with all the Telltale games. It'll be £2.99 or $4.99 for the individual episode, or about £10, $15 if you buy the season pass, which is probably generally, you know, the way to go for it. I'm looking forward to playing through this one. I kind of want to, oddly, it sounds a bit traitorous on an iOS focused podcast, but the iOS versions are very good, very playable, very strong, but they are slightly laggy, you know. And Telltale have had this problem with a lot of the other versions. On Xbox and PS3, you still get those stutters when it shifts from scene to scene, and it'll take a little bit of time to catch up. And I found the smoothest way to play it's actually on PC. And I accidentally got a review thing and started playing it. I'm like, this is quite good. I might play it on PC. So now I have to play it through twice.
Yeah.
One time is like being nice, and one time being an utter bastard.
What a terrible life you lead.
Yeah, I'm not looking for sympathy. It's just a thing I noticed. All right. But if you've been playing through on iOS, then that should be available right now from the little app shop in the app itself. So you can go and grab it then. Also out this week, what else have we got? Ah, yes, now this is kind of fun. Thomas Was Alone. Another game talking about Portal and all that coming to different platforms. This has now appeared on iPad. iPad only, I will add. But it's here nonetheless. So if you're not familiar, it is the now like well over a million selling indie hit from Mike Bithell, who explores the world of a little block who's bouncing around trying to get to an exit, and his little blocky buddies as well. So he starts off a particular size, he starts with the red one, and then he encounters a friend who's orange but a bit smaller, he can't jump as high, and the aim of the game comes between using the individual characters and manipulating each of their strengths. So, for example, the red one can jump a bit higher, so that's great, but the little orange one needs help to get over the gaps and stuff, so you need to get him to hop on top of his head and all that. It's all very kind of, you know, cute and lo-fi and adorable. The thing that makes it interesting or separates it is the fact that the whole experience is narrated. So you've got Chappie, I forget the guy's name. What's his name, Peter?
His name is
Danny Wallace, isn't it?
Is it Danny Wallace? Yeah. He did a book with that guy, Gorman.
Did he? All right. Yeah.
And he's in Assassin's Creed.
Brilliant. All right.
And what else is he's? I think that's all he's done in his life.
He said some words to someone at some point. Yeah, well, yeah. He's narrating it, so he's kind of giving you the inner monologue of all the blocks. And it gives the blocks personalities. Talking to them, he's describing how one of them is a bit grumpy and not happy to see the other ones. And weirdly, it does kind of work. I've played about the first 20 minutes of it. I'm impressed with what I've seen. I will say that it is, I mentioned this to you before, it feels like indie game 101. In terms of, it's got everything. It's got the lo-fi visual. It's got the plinky-plonky piano soundtrack. It's got, It's got, like, you know, a cute narration. It's slightly dark in tone, like, ever so slightly, because the world's all grey and black and everything. It ticks all the indie boxes.
And it's got the Twitter cred. Like, it's got that sort of, like, cool with the sort of, I suppose, the indie establishment. It's got literally everything. Oh, and it's a sort of puzzle game, puzzle platformer.
That works too. Did you play it, Alicia, on any platform?
I've not played it yet. I'm intrigued though. Like I think the fact that it is so simple is really interesting. It's going to work. Like the fact that you can emotionally invest in a square.
Yeah.
Sounds cool.
It does work. And having played it for a little bit today on the iPad, I can confirm the controls are pretty good. That's always the worry when you're porting a console game onto a touchscreen, but it's very, very simple. You've just got the jump button in the lower right-hand corner of the screen and two arrows, so it's dirt simple stuff. They function just fine. It works really well, and you've got plenty of room on the iPad screen, so your thumb doesn't feel cramped in to try and manipulate two pixels or anything. Plenty of room to play with, and it works. It's pretty nice. So you can get that right now. I think it's a little bit dear. Like, it's about $5.99, I think.
Whoa!
That's right.
How do they justify that?
For a video game!
Yeah, well, it's indie, but it's not that indie, you know? It's premium indie.
Is this part of the sort of price revival, the sort of renaissance, where there's a whole bunch of people who want games on the App Store to push up in price? They want, you know, they want $2.99. They want, you know, they want to be able to charge £4.99. Because, really, £4.99... for a game, we go, oh, that's a bit, it better be a Gameloft game with a license, like, and actually, you know,
it's not unreasonable, is it?
It's not unreasonable, but it is trying to compete with other sort of puzzle platformer games on a system that has quite a few puzzle platformers.
Yeah, you might think it would gone in a little bit cheaper, but I think this game has the credibility, as you say, and the profile that enough people will be maybe willing to give it a try. And if you've got an iPad, then you can afford to pay $4.99. Well, you wouldn't have an iPad. I think I genuinely think that's the argument some people use. It's like, especially for iPad only. It's like, you bought an iPad, you clearly don't mind doing this. Either way, you can get it right now, say about £5.99 or $8 or $9, I think it'll be. That's Thomas Was Alone. What else have we got? Now, this is good, because I was playing this yesterday and having some fun. Joy, which is a proper twin-stick shootery shooting shooter, where you shoot the living crap out of everything and float around the screen. It reminds me of Geometry Wars, which I have a huge fondness for, only it's done in a slightly more pastel shade. Like, Geometry Wars is all about bright neon colours on a black background. This is all kind of sort of dusty blues and kind of soft pinks and stuff like that. But it's very slick. It's incredibly smooth, really minimal in its design, and actually really, really playable. Of the games we played yesterday, when we were doing the stream yesterday, Peter, this is the one I quite liked. And you like shooters, don't you? You're a shmup guy.
I do. I do.
So have you been... You do, yes, yes. Have you been anywhere near this yet? Have you added it to your collection?
I have not, but that is not for lack of trying. It's more to do with the fact that I only saw it yesterday, basically. And I've got the weekend ahead of me, and I was thinking, oh, maybe I should save it for then. Because I do get the feeling that once I do start playing it, this is one of those games where I can see myself kind of getting sucked into it for a huge amount of time and wanting to, like... nail it, you know, nail the actual controls. That's the exciting part to me about these kinds of dual stick shooters, figuring out their physicality and then mastering that.
Well, that's the other thing. It did seem to feel incredibly smooth. I was controlling without too much hassle. Alex, who reviewed it for AppSpy, he found a little bit more trouble on the touchscreen of the iPhone. So I was playing it on the iPad, as I do most of these streams, and that gives you more space to play around with. Like more kind of movement in your thumb, so you can kind of pick out the exact angle you're looking for. On the touchscreen, it's a little smaller, and you've got to be a little bit more micro with your movements. And he found it a tad trickier. But on the iPad, the experience I had was very, very positive. You can get that right now. It costs, let me double check that, £1.49 or $1.99, which is perfectly reasonable. And yeah, very slick.
That's like three Thomas Was Alones.
It's like a third of a Thomas. It's just a Thomas. You have to pay extra for the was and the alone.
And he literally would be alone at that point.
Yeah, actually, that's true. Everyone, I've seen reviews where people are like, it's tall Thomas Was Alone, but like he's not alone, he's got other blocks. So why is it called that? This is wrong. Obviously missing the notion of the past tense.
Yeah, braids. But braids not about braids at all.
I know, that's right. It's rubbish. I don't see any hair done. Okay, so you can get that right now. Also out at the moment is a game called Biosis, which I also played on the stream and had a little bit of... Well,
you were sort of like, I don't know, you were kind of in two minds about this. Like, I think part of you was like, ooh, it's a bit botanicular, it's a little bit bio, it's a little bit nice, it's all that sort of stuff. And then you were a little bit like, I don't like the animation, kind of played this game before.
That's an uncanny impression, yeah.
It is exactly you.
Well, it's true. It's one of these games, I think it takes a very good photograph. Like, it looks very good in the screenshots. When you see it in motion, which I'll actually jump to in the little video bit now, it's fine. But it's not, I don't think it's quite as impressive. It's an interesting mixture of different game mechanics, I suppose. So you've got elements of Cut the Rope, i.e. your little blob character, you have to guide him to a warp at the end of the level. And to do so, you have to use swinging abilities. So there's one little tendril that you can fire up from this plant, and then you swing left and right, a la Cut the Rope, and that'll direct him towards a rope. The other things are these little pulsating organisms which have a magnetic property. And you have to change the polarity of the magnet to either attract it, so it goes wa-bump and sucks into it, or you sort of flick it, and then it repels and sends it flying off into the distance. And using a mixture of these mechanics, you have to send it flying from platform to platform or swinging over gaps and get it to the little thing at the end. Very interesting idea. Not as, I guess, accessible, I don't think. You're dealing with a lot of mechanics quite early on.
Right.
And like I say, whilst it looks good, I like the art style, I wasn't quite as impressed with it before. Maybe it's just because I like Cut the Rope a lot. And
What did you guys hear about the story? Because, like, I mean, the art design is one thing. It does look beautiful. But one of the things I've really heard about it is that it's very emotionally driven. You know, this is a character that's trying to save its one true love. And did that really come across? I think it must be quite hard in the Cut the Rope style thing.
I totally skipped over that.
Wow.
Actually, on the video that's playing right now, it's showing the intro bit where he's talking about the goodness of life and evil, and two organisms are talking to other organisms about love and happiness. So yeah, I guess there is a story element of it, but when I played it through briefly on the stream, I didn't notice any of it.
It doesn't
really
come across. I think that's just to do with the type of game it is, though. I mean, when you're doing a puzzler, it's really hard to marry emotionally investing in the character with kind of solving a puzzle.
Yeah, and often what you find is there's a dissonance between them just showing you some cutscenes and then the game begins.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult to merge them. I guess that's why people have started adopting the narrative thing. I think it became really popular after BioShock. You know, you had the guy on the radio in your ear all the time talking to you, and people realised you can kind of relay plot whilst you're doing things, rather than it all coming to a grinding halt while you read a big block of text.
Now, are you... Right, okay, here's a question to both of you, because I feel like I'm the only one in the world that does this, and I hope I'm not, but I'm of the game-playing age whereby I would be told a piece of story through audio,
right,
and then I would get to a point where the audio would cut off because the next thing happened. So I'm of the game-playing style where, like, somebody will start talking and I'll immediately just stand still. Like, Bioshock for me took about twice as long as it probably should have because I was just, like, stood there, like, listening to what's his name, Andrew Ryan, going, hey, blah, 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 do this, 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 and this. Would you kind of do this? And, like, do you guys do that at all?
Weirdly, Thomas Was Alone has that. When I was playing through the first few levels of it, I was running to the end of the level, and he stopped talking midway through because I completed it too fast.
Yeah.
And you get the same thing with GTA missions as well, don't you? When they're chatting to you in the back of the car, you'll often kind of slow down to a crawl so you can hear everything. I know what you mean. But in the case of this one, Biosys, they have chosen just to show you some pictures and do a bit of text. I mean, I'm interested. I didn't get that far through the game, only about 15 minutes in, so it could well pick up and turn out to be fantastically interesting. I'm going to reserve judgment, though, and our review of it will obviously be up sometime very soon, so we'll link you when it happens. But you can get it right now. It's £1.49 or $1.99. So that's Biosys. What else have we got? Ah, yes, Darkin. Now, this is something we also played on the stream yesterday. It is a match 3 puzzler with a very gothy style. It looks a bit Tim Burton, is what I thought. So you're trying to match up a bunch of different icons. You've got hearts, you've got teeth, you've got coins, and you've got weird-looking little baby-faced vampire things. And you join them all up using your finger, and they disappear, and everything else falls down from the top of the screen in that very bejeweled-y style that we're all used to now. Puzzle and Dragons and the other one with candy in it, Crush. Yeah, that one. They're all doing it. This one's slightly different in so much as you can not just join things in a straight line or in diagonals, but you can actually join anything that's adjacent remotely. So you can literally, as you can see in the demo, like draw lines through almost every single icon on the screen, provided you don't overlap. So it expands the limitations of the gameplay slightly. Mm. Very nice art style and everything. Initially, I looked at it and was like, oh, it's just another bloody match 3 thing. And it's a bit difficult at this point to get super excited about one of those. Maybe I'm just being a bit cynical. This should come to Android as well. I think it makes sense for this sort of thing to exist, especially with more free-to-play stuff being available. I mean, this one actually isn't. It is, let me have a look, £1.99 or $2.99. So you play proper monies for it, which will be interesting when you have to see it go up against lots and lots of free-to-play match 3 puzzlers.
Yeah, you have to really like a match 3 puzzler to pay for it.
I mean, especially when you've got like Puzzle and Dragons and all those other ones that have become so global and so huge, you have to really go for it, like you say. But it does look very slick, and it is solidly put together. So if you are really into the art style thing, this might be the one for you. It's Darkin, £1.99 or $2.99. More puzzlers. It was a really puzzly week. We discovered it playing on the app stores yesterday, which made Peter practically pass out.
My head is sore from scratching.
I suppose it's that twitchy shmup thing that you're really into, isn't it?
I just like pretty simple games.
I'm so
for pretty simple people. Yeah. Is that what you're saying?
Okay, not really on that.
Well, sorry. You know, like, yeah, I like games where I don't have to think much, basically. Okay.
What do you lean towards? I mean, you're an Android player. If you game on your Android phone, what do you tend to go for?
Generally, I really like kind of strategy games, or ones that art style definitely does pull me in, or how much of a world is created. Puzzlers are nice, but I don't find there's the addictive quality to them to make me coming back. Whereas if I'm really invested in a game, then I'll constantly want to pull it out. Whereas there's just something about a puzzle. I play it for a day maybe, and then I'm like, okay, I'm done.
Right, okay. Mm. I've always been interested in the narrative stuff. That's why I'm Silent Hill 2 being like my favourite game of all time. Largely because it's just such a complete mind fudge all the way through. It's just about trying to work out what on earth is going on. And in terms of combat, it's incredibly ropey, like deliberately ropey, one might even say, because you don't want to get into combat, you want to run really fast if possible.
Some of the best games are like that. Even if you look at games that are deliberately designed so you can't, like Amnesia on the PC and things, where the scariest games, the most brilliant games, are not when you have a massive gun and you can just easily plow through enemies. Ones where you really have to think about your combat and your strategy and get past it. So there you go, there's the thinking.
Okay, fair enough. Well, in that case, you probably won't want to download 4444. How's that for a pitch? No, I did play this yesterday. You can see the trailer of it going on the side of the screen. It is a game in which you must match up a whole bunch of coloured tiles. So the way it works out is kind of like almost a card game where you can see the next tile that you're going to lay. So you're presented initially with like four tiles on the screen, for example. Two of them are blue, two of them are red. And in the bottom corner of the screen, you can see two red tiles. So you tap the blue tiles, they get laid over. The red tiles get laid over the top of the blue ones, making the whole screen red, and that clears your screen. So the basic idea is to try and use the tiles that you have to make the screen a unified colour. Initially, it's just four similarly sized blocks, like four quadrants. Then you start getting subdivided into little eights. Then it gets even more complex and weird characters start appearing as well. It was very easy to pick up. It's quite basic the way that it works. I mean, it works, and I can see how the mechanic could be compulsive. It wasn't like astonishingly well presented, I didn't think. But I can see that puzzle fans might be into this sort of thing. If nothing else, it looks like those cubist paintings and people might like the aesthetic. I don't know. But it's called 4444. You can get it right now, and it's £1.49 or $1.99 from the App Store. However, the one square-based puzzler that I really did get drawn to yesterday was Hyper Squares. This was cool because I was there playing 444 and all the other puzzlers and going, yep, and kind of ambling through it at a sedate pace. And then I booted up Hyper Squares and started playing the tutorial, and then immediately my commentary just turned into quick left, right, because this is one of them proper super twitchy things. You can see it going mental in the video on the right hand side of the screen. So you've got more squares, right? And you're trying to guide them into portals, square, similarly sized portals. So you're taking the right size square and matching it by just putting your finger on it and dragging it into the portal. That's how it starts off. Then it starts getting more complicated. You have to change the size of the square by putting two fingers on it and pinching and zooming like you do, you know, if you're resizing a photo or something, or zooming into a web page. And then you have to sort of make it the right size and then fling it at the portal. Then you have to put two fingers on and start twisting it. So you change the orientation of the square to make it more like a diamond or something. Then a billion of them start getting thrown at you all at once. And it's really, really twitchy, and it kind of comes at you in waves. So provided you complete like 10, you can push onto the next level, I think. But they just keep coming and coming and getting faster and faster and faster. And it's kind of fun. I was really enjoying myself because it's one of those ones where you put it on the table and get two fingers down and go right and kind of focus entirely. Yeah. And I found it really quite absorbing and kind of a neat little idea.
It's cool. It almost seems like I can imagine if you get really good at it and someone was just to walk in and see you play it, it'd be like, you know, in Minority Report where you've got all these windows and be like,
yes, yeah.
And just someone's like, whoa.
On a very, very tiny scale. It does very much feel like that. And you do have to get like four fingers involved at some point. You can't just do it with one thumb or something. You've got to be resizing and directing things simultaneously with both hands. It gets quite like nightmarish, really. So it may make your brain bleed, but you might also really, really like it. We'll get a review up for this soonish, because I think we all took to this within the both App Spy and Pocket Gamer chat rooms. So it is out right now, £1.49 or $1.99. finally, in the out there section, which is pretty well packed this week, Table Tennis Touch. It is a sort of ping pong sim thing, which is very much in the, I guess, Virtua Tennis style, only with tables. First thing, looks really nice. It's well slick looking. And I haven't played this one. It's the one I haven't played, but Harry has, and says apparently it's well good. There's not a lot of gameplay footage in this. I think it's mostly a pre-rendered trailer that we're showing you. But say, Harry has been hands-on, who is our sort of resident PG reviewer, and he says it's actually pretty sweet. There are a couple of IAPs, but they're for things that you don't really need, according to him. You get to test yourself in a series of challenges. There's a career mode that lets you kind of battle through a load of challenges and gives you relative points. Oh, there you go. There's some gameplay footage. Oh, it does look nice, actually.
That does look good.
That is pretty badass. Yeah, okay, so you're controlling, using your finger to directly move the bat around in a one-to-one kind of motion. So wherever you put your finger on the screen and drag it, it follows it precisely, which lets you then return the volleys. And it's a full 3D environment, really well rendered, looks very smart. And yeah, if Harry says it plays well, that's very promising. We're reviewing this one tonight, actually, on AtSpy, so the review will be up tomorrow in video form, but we'll also be reviewing it on Pocket Gamer, so that'll be up very, very soon as well. That's available right now, £2.49 or $3.99, and it's called, let's get the title right, Table Tennis Touch.
Come sit upon my throne of games.
Here we are once again back in the chamber wherein lies the throne of games. Once again, we have a new person joining us this week. Alicia's never sat upon throne before.
No.
So we'll probably, just to throw you in right to the deep end, start with you. So how this works is you sit on the throne, right?
Okay.
Of games. And then you basically just tell us about something that you have been playing this week. So is there a game that you would like to share with the people?
See, I've been really dull and I've been playing Plants vs. Zombies, which is one of the most kind of obvious games to be playing, but
Is this the old one or the new one?
Plants vs. Zombies 2 I've been on at the moment.
Okay, really?
It's because I lost my phone, so I picked up my old one that I had in a drawer somewhere and I found that it had all my old games on it, and I was like, oh, it's on the commute in the morning. Opens up Plants vs. Zombies 2 and I've got kind of into it again. When was the last time you guys played it?
Well, the last time I had a go was when we were doing sort of video footage for it. I had to play through a fair way. I played through like the first world. I got to the end of it, got to the portal bit at the end. At which point it told me to turn around and go back and play the same levels again.
That happened. So annoying.
There was a big kind of crossover with this where people who loved the first game, and rightfully so, because it is a really good, albeit simple, really good tower defense game and, you know, full of charm and character and all that kind of stuff. The second one came out, they announced it was going to be free to play, and people went, must we really? But it got very mixed opinions. Some people said it did the free-to-play mechanic really, really well, and there were lots of positive reviews from some quite major outlets. I wasn't quite so taken with it, just because as soon as that happens, where you get to the end, I've completed all the levels, and you go, right, I want to move to the next bit now, and it says, no, 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 go around and do the same levels again until you have enough stars or whatever. And I'm like, oh, must we do this? Must we grind? Because that feels like the kind of thing that is artificially put there to prey upon your impatience, to make you go, well, I've completed the levels, I just want to move on. Mm. All right, have another 69p, here you go.
They've done some really smart things as well, like smart just in terms of making people come back kind of way. Can be slightly annoying for the player. They've now got this kind of, I think it's called a Zen garden, where you grow your own kind of plants, and then they get boosted. So say if you got a walnut and it takes about 10 hours to grow it, but when it and you have to keep on coming back to water it, so you have to keep on coming back into the game and opening it up, and when it's ready to be boosted, you get notifications sent to your phone even when it's not open. So which is brilliant for them, because obviously it means you're constantly reminded of the game. Really annoying sometimes when your phone just goes off and then you've just got, because you can have up to 6 plants, you have 6 notifications from it saying, your walnut has boosted, your pea shoot has boosted, and you're just like, ah, so much boosting!
People think you're mental. The worst thing for me is when you're in an actual phone conversation and you go to hang up, and then all these notifications pop up, and they stop you ending the call. So it just looks like you're frantically, madly tapping at something, and the other person thinks you're having a stroke at the end of the phone, I assume.
Yeah, or if they're not a gamer, and you're there screaming, my walnut has boosted! Like, what now?
They probably hang up quite quickly themselves after that, I imagine. So I thought it played beautifully and I really enjoyed the game. Are you fussed by the free-to-play thing, or does it not bother you too much? Can you get around it in this game?
I can get around it in this game because it's easily... I personally think they do the free-to-play mechanic quite well in the sense of you can unlock worlds by paying £1.99, or you can play the game for 20 hours and kind of, and I personally like achievements. You know, when I play games on console, I like having a goal to work towards and that reward at the end, so I don't mind doing little tasks and little levels and working it up, and so then that sense when I unlock a world is great, and there's also that sense of, you know, you could have paid for it, so there's also that added thing of, I've just saved £1.99.
Because skills. That's good to know. Achievement wise, I was always the opposite. I know people get very excited about them on Xbox Live and the trophies on the PlayStation. I never cared. Like, for me, the game was over when the game was over and the story arc had finished or whatever. And sometimes, one of the few games actually that I want, if you want to go back and collect everything, which is something I don't do, I quite liked the more recent Tomb Raider. The latest Tomb Raider, that made me kind of want to go back and do all the tombs, because they were sort of separated from the core story in a slightly weird way. Like, I couldn't work out... You always felt like you were being diverted if you went off and did a tomb.
Yeah.
Like, there'd be some guy saying, like, I need to be rescued, he's going to die any second. And then you walk past a tomb and you're like, do I go in there or is he actually going to die in a second?
What worked so well with that was the fact that the tombs were, the island kind of had its own history and you could play through completely and not delve into that. But those tombs and those side quests and the little things you could collect and things that not only did they get you achievements, they opened up this world for you to explore and you got a sense of the people who'd crashed there before and it made it more rich.
Yeah, yeah. So do you find that with the Plants vs. Zombies then? Do you get achievement rushes from getting your little notifications?
No, from the little notifications, I find those very annoying. I'm desperately searching for a way to switch that off. If anyone knows how to switch that off, I would so appreciate it. But okay. Yeah. But in general, no, the actual game itself, I really enjoy it. It makes the commute go really quickly. Again, it's one you can just dip in and dip out of.
That is true. I haven't tried to sit down and play it for huge stretches yet, but there was a chunk where I got really invested. Did you go near it, Peter? You've been Plants vs. Zombies. Silent.
This is the thing, isn't it, right? It combines two of my least favourite things.
Puzzles and horticulture.
That's right, yeah. Puzzles and zombies. Like, I don't
oh, yeah.
want anything to
yeah,
do with them.
Yeah, you don't like zombies.
I never really considered that.
I don't want anything to do that. I played the very original, like, maybe 5-10 minutes once, and I went, oh, this is very pretty and very sweet. And then one with a cone on his head got quite close to my house, and I closed it away. I was like, no, that's enough for me. I just thought, no. It all got too real, basically.
That sounds harrowing. All right, then. Well, that's good to know that someone is still playing it and that they actually approve of the free-to-play thing. Like, there was a very big mixed opinion on
this.
Yeah,
no, I can totally understand that, yeah.
Yeah, and it's nice to hear it from both sides. All right, then. Well, thank you ever so much, Lysia. You may now hop off, and I'm going to jump onto the throne in your stead and talk about... Good. I'm glad everyone's getting on board with the fiction of this, physically jumping off of the thrones. What was the thing I was going to talk about? I do forget. Oh, yeah, technically, I've kind of talked about them already because it was going to be the Thomas Was Alone thing. And in some respects, what's the other one? Oh, yeah, Joy. I say certainly get Joy. That's my personal recommendation, first of all, because if you are any kind of shmup fan, it's a really good example of it. If you're anyway hooked into Geometry Wars and like that twin stick shooter thing, it was a very good example of that mechanic, and I would say go for it. Regarding Thomas Was Alone, I looked at the Pocket Gamer reviews. This is sort of a little aside. The Vita version, which was obviously released a few months back, or last year. Mm. We gave that a 6 out of 10.
We did indeed.
Mike, who was a reviewer at the time for it, he was impressed with the voiceover and the narrative in the world, but he called the puzzles into question, in so much as there was never much of a challenge really involved in the game at any point, he didn't think, and he also thought that it didn't deliver any of those kind of wow moments, those things we were talking about in relating to previous games, where you like Monument Valley, for example, where constantly I was just going, oh, that's fantastic, look at the world change. He felt that there was like not so much to it. However, Harry's review went up today for the iPad, and he had a far more favourable view that gave it an 8 out of 10 and said it was actually quite cracking. This does tie into the thing we were talking about with Bioshock, where I do think the real draw of that game is the way it weaves narrative and character into the blocks, the actions that are going on screen, possibly more so than the actual puzzle gameplay itself. And I think people who criticize it are like, yes, it's a pretty idea and it's a nice little story and everything, but like the game itself, some people find a little bit lacking. Having only played about half an hour of it so far, it's pretty simple stuff, so I can see what they mean, but I assume it does get a lot tougher as you push through it. The only thing I was pleased to see on the iPad version is that it does actually play very well. The controls are the most important thing as far as I was concerned. So if you do like the original version and you feel like rebuying it, you can. But if you are holding off and you haven't gone anywhere near the game yet and you do have the iPad handy and you think you'd like to play it on the go, there's no reason not to. This does appear to be a very good port of the game. So if puzzly, platformy things are your bag, then no excuse not to grab it. So yes, that's my very quick addition to this one. So, Peter.
Yes, hello. I will jump onto the throne of games and stand up and declare that it is shilling time.
Oh my word.
Shilling time.
Here we go. All right then.
So basically, the people who pay our bills would like me to make two announcements, and that's fine. I'm happy to do that, so long as they keep paying my bills. So the first thing is, hey guys, do you want to win an iPad? Yes, of course you do. Go to pocketgamer.co.uk, type in Godzilla, Godzilla, and we've got this like competition thing. I'm sure Danny Caffeine Dreamer in the chat will link to it. Now we've got this like competition thing. You can win an iPad. It's pretty baller, if I'm honest with you. So win that. And the other thing, as some people were kind of chatting about earlier, is that Steel Media, which is obviously the parent company, has now become a games publisher in some small tiny way. We've just released a game called Appy Nerd. Flap Nightmare, which is a quote, a man's nightmare journey through handheld gaming hell. Now, if I was being lazy, I would call it a Flappy Bird clone with some retro handhelds slapped onto it. But I'm not being lazy.
By lazy, do you mean accurate?
That is for you to tell, Apps by Pocket Gamer podcast viewers, because it's free. It's a free download. Go and get it. So I've downloaded it. I've been playing it. It feels a little bit like Flappy Bird, but Flappy Bird is good. And if you download it enough, and I don't know whether or not my bosses are listening, but I'm going to say it anyway. If we download it enough and enough people say, hey, I really like that game, you guys should be in it, then I'm totally going to get them to put my face in it, and then you can fly me about the levels. So there you go. Go download it. See what it is. I'm currently like 7th on the leaderboards for it, so you can try and beat my score on that one.
Nice.
Anyway, let's stop the shilling because I feel dirty.
As well you should.
I've been playing a game that translates as Cat Dash very hard, but it's actually called Michiriniku Dashu.
I have a video of this. Hang on a moment. This is bonkers.
It's fantastic.
Is it?
Yes, it's brilliant. So it's made by the Yamaha Music Media Corporation, and I downloaded it after searching for Cute Cat Game on iTunes, because I'd just been burned by a Hello Kitty Match 3 puzzler, which I'd hit a paywall on. So this is an auto runner. The difference is essentially that you're running towards the screen, and it's got these cute little cats, and you play one little cat, and he runs towards the screen, and you pick up these other cats with you, and they form this sort of like musical parade with you.
Right.
And you have to jump over obstacles, that sort of thing, otherwise you lose other cats, and then deliver them to fish shops that are sort of dotted around, I assume, Tokyo. And then you cause major havoc there, and all the other cats run away, and then you go back and you try and collect even more cats. It's really flipping difficult, and you have to collect all these cards at the same time, and I've no idea what any of the writing says. None of it's been translated into English, and I very every once in a while I think, am I about to make a payment of something? I'm about to buy a lot of IAPs.
Have you spent lots of yen?
I've no idea, but it's beautiful and it's pretty and it's lovely, and it's an auto runner with a sort of a bit of a twist, and I quite like that. It is very, very difficult. Play sessions last about a minute and a half, and it is wonderful. Like it is absolutely wonderful. It's tapped into this thing that I love, which is like sweet, cute, happy kind of games. It's simple, it's easy. It's like to dodge, you hold one finger on the bottom of the screen and sort of move left and right, and then you let go of it to jump. It's really, really easy. You can play it with one hand, you can do it while you're on the you know, Tokyo bus or the Tokyo bullet train, whatever it is that they have over there, and you equally you can do it on the train from Bristol to London Paddington.
How did you get hold of this, incidentally? Is this worldwide availability or what?
Yeah, so this is on the US App Store. It's also on the British App Store. I'm sure it's on the App Stores everywhere, but none of it's been translated.
It hasn't been localised.
It's amazing. So you do have to be really careful with what you're doing. And
it's a mini game in and of itself, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. But once you do get going with it, it's absolutely brilliant. So yes, I thoroughly recommend it. It's cute, it's happy, it's jolly, it's very, very simple, and I've been playing it a lot. It is, just to reiterate, it is Michiriniku Dashu. And
which translates as what?
Cat Dash very hard.
I love the Google Translate versions of these things. Are amazing. Happy cat run long time. Woo. Awesome. Yeah. With exclamation points and everything. All right, fantastic, I guess. I'm tempted to download it just to see what the hell it's all about.
Yeah.
Thank you for that, Peter, and thank you, everybody, for joining us, both in the Twitch stream over there, and thank you, Alicia, for joining us.
No way.
This was bundles of fun, and sorry about all the things crashing halfway through.
No, sorry for bringing this plague of technical issues upon you.
Yes, that's right. I forgot that this was all your fault. You're absolutely right. So, a pox on your Skype feed.
Oh, no, man,
it was
no.
really... It was great to have you guys, and Peter as well. And everybody, thanks for joining us once again. Come back next week. We'll be here on Twitch and also online, as always. Thanks for listening, one and all. Take it easy. Bye.
Bye.